Good morning and welcome to the roundtable panel. It is very, very nice to be back to regular programming, back after an incredible 7-day fun drive, and it's just been remarkable, and we're all very, very happy to be back. And Alan, I assume you still have a smile on your face, right?
No, I have a smile on my face. My problem is that what happens, and you know this too, Joe, the adrenaline leaves your body after you've been just on for this time. And when you're on, you've got to be thinking about what you're going to say. So it takes a tremendous amount, may not seem that way.
Or at least occasionally you have to think about what you're going to say.
So what happens is the adrenaline flees your body the minute you finish. You say, okay, adrenaline, go away. And then, as I have always said, you can push a marble across the floor with your nose. I mean, that's the way it is. Yeah. You crash. Yeah.
But it's we want to thank everyone who was a part of the fun drive, and to all the wonderful people who gave, and to all of our volunteers, and to all of the people who gave food and support and money and help. And it's just been it was an amazing effort, as it always is, and we thank you from the bottom of our heart.
What a community project, huh?
Absolutely. And you know, we keep on saying in these fun drives that we want to get you back to regular programming. So here it is, and we're thrilled to be back. Let me introduce our panel to you. Of course, WAMC's Alan Chartok, who we were just speaking to. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is with us. Mike, we've missed you.
Well,
welcome back.
We have. Congratulations.
Thank you. And Albany Journalism Professor, University at Albany Journalism Professor, and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo back
Hello.
In the saddle as well. So good morning. All right, let us talk about many issues, beginning with sort of this is one of the bad things about a fun drive is we don't get on every morning and get to talk about stuff. One of the cool things is when you come back, you just sort of have this plethora of stories to discuss. So a lot has happened in the Ebola world while we were away for the week. We had our first U.S. casualty, our first U.S. death in Texas. And now there is more information on this as the CDC is rethinking methods to stop the spread of Ebola. The transmission of the Ebola virus to a nurse in Dallas forced the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Monday to reconsider its approach to containing the disease, which with state and federal officials reexamining whether equipment and procedures were adequate or too loosely followed, and whether more decontamination steps are necessary when health workers leave isolation units. Rosemary.
Well, that, of course, I've been reading this every day, and I'm the one who was most criticized on the show for raising alarm and yelling, oh, scare.
No, I agreed with you. I did.
And I think, you know, I've been somewhat justified. The two researchers who discovered the virus and have done the most research on it have said, you know, we understand the need to keep the public calm, but there's no way that you can say this disease can't be transmitted by air, which, of course, is a much more dangerous transmission. And you look at what's happening. How did that worker, CDC doesn't know, Texas Presbyterian doesn't know, how did a worker fully encased in protective gear going through procedures catch the disease? It is easier to catch than we have been told. I thought that from the beginning, and I still do. I think it now has everyone's attention, and they're going to work on it. It isn't Ebola so much as figuring out what to do in a pandemic like this. Ebola won't be the last virus we have to deal with. So I'm glad it's got everybody's attention. I think it's very troublesome.
You know, it's fascinating to me, and I've been thinking about this a lot because I was with you, Rosemary. I don't know that I accept the premise that it can be transmitted through the air, but I do accept the premise that we have to be very vigilant about what we're doing here. And there are those people who are running around from the CDC and some of the other places who are basically saying, don't panic. I don't want this country to be at a place where it gets caught because it's busy not panicking.
Being calm.
Yeah. I think we can be calm, but I think we also have to take this very seriously.
Right.
And there are times, we've seen them before in emergencies in this country, where you have to do things that nobody really likes. I mean, you don't like taking your shoes off in an airport.
Better start it on that.
I know, I hate that.
No. Yeah,
but they can take my temperature.
But they can take your temperature because it's really important. Yeah. I've said my piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you were saying I was struck by your comments, Alan, in that in agreeing with Rosemary up to the point of it being airborne or the possibility of it
possibility
being,
is there or will be there
and
in the future.
I'm struck
to watch it.
I'm struck by, you know, this is. We can use climate change as an example of, you know, this battling science and so
exactly.
forth. But you, I have this report and you have this report and okay, what's right? But what I get a sense in watching the coverage over the last 2 weeks seems to be we don't think it does and yet we don't really know.
Yeah,
that's my takeaway. I don't know if that's accurate.
Well, but the parallel to that, it seems to me, is fracking. We have decided in this state we don't want fracking because we don't know. In other words, we just don't know. We know a little bit. We know enough to say New York's water supply can be. They said nothing's wrong with it, but New York's water supply is untouchable and Syracuse water supply is untouchable. But we don't know whether when we frack we're going to. So it's not that we know. It's that we don't know and that precaution is the byword here.
Well, the issue here, though, is it's very immediate. It's right at our doorstep and beyond. And whether it was airborne or whether it was a mistake, like
right.
the CDC is suggesting right. a breach in protocol in the Dallas hospital that resulted in this. And it's hard
yeah.
to imagine there would be any breach after they messed up the beginning.
Yeah, if there's one lesson out of this whole thing is no matter what's wrong with you, do not go to Texas Presbyterian Hospital.
All right, but
do not go to Texas.
Yeah, but it does demonstrate that you can have all the protocols in place, and human beings being as they are will not always adhere to them.
Yeah, the cameraman who actually got the disease while it was in Liberia, that was another case. How he didn't touch vomit or body parts or any of that. So everyone's
not
like,
that
well,
we're
maybe,
aware of.
Yeah,
that,
we
you
don't
know.
Know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
And that's what the researchers
right.
were saying, too, that you've got the virus now has this huge territory in mm-hmm. which it's rampant. It's out of control in some places. So you don't know what's happening to it, how it's mutating. And what he said was not that, oh, it's definitely airborne. Don't get me wrong. He said the possibility that is happening or could happen, we cannot rule out, which means just what Alan said, that we have to be ready for everything. Yes, calm down, people, and don't make them all alarmed, but you need to be acting as if that's the next thing.
So, yeah, we need to be vigilant.
The last thing you want is somebody with a gun going next door where they think there's. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that happens and when you get panic, and that's what you don't want to have happen.
So,
Joe?
I just want to ask, because we just used the phrase, and the phrase was officially used this week, and I find it interesting, which is a breach of conduct caused the nurse, Nina Pham, 26 years old, from Texas, who was a specialized, licensed critical care nurse, who was also described by all parties involved as a meticulous nurse at the top of her profession, that there's a breach of conduct. Now, my question is, breach of protocol. My apologies, breach of protocol. So my point or my question is, we don't know if that's on her part or if it is just somewhere along the line something happened.
The protocol
and we don't really know what. We don't really even know what caused that. I guess what I'm saying is that from that statement, it could be assumed that we know where the screw-up was, but I don't think so.
CDC said that. In fact, one of their recommendations is that you monitor the suit-up procedure. When they take off or put on those suits, you can contaminate mm-hmm. yourself with fluids on it. Mm-hmm. That would be a mistake. It's certainly not some violation. Breach indicates like a willful violation.
Right, yeah.
It could just be an error and
they
don't know.
She doesn't want this. Certainly.
She does not want this, no. This whole thing, and actually many of the stories we are going to talk about, like the Catholic Church and homosexuality and Alan talked about fracking. You could talk about oil going in big ships. It's all the same thing. We make guarantees, set up protocols for safety. But when there's so many people and such large movements involved, you don't have control over everything.
Yeah,
precisely.
And if anybody thinks that it's not coming to this country, they're just wrong.
It's here.
It's here, and it will happen.
Well, what'll be interesting is how well this nurse in Texas does, having diagnosed it early and putting her into, the medical care that is standard in this country versus somebody who has very poor medical care or had delayed medical care in the case of the man who died in Texas.
All I know is right now
if any of us get the disease, I think we should say we want to go to Atlanta.
Yeah, not go to Emory, not Texas Presbyterian, really.
Atlanta seems to have a much better success rate in this right now.
That's true. That's
and
true.
The other thing we're not talking about is the dog.
Yeah, in Spain. Yeah. That was a question that one of our listeners called
yes.
in. Can dogs get it? We did not know, and there was a dispute about it in Spain.
And they wanted to put the dog down.
They put it.
I don't think so.
Oh, I know people protested. Did they?
Yeah, I don't think so. There was a picture of the nurse with a dog licking her face.
No,
I thought that was in Happier Days. I'm looking it up now.
Well,
it may have been.
It may have been.
Actually, I think the dog was put. Down.
Maybe there are two different dogs we're talking about. Because I saw something
health,
in one of the tabs this morning.
Well, there is a dog apparently involved in Dallas, that dog will not be put down, but the other dog in Spain apparently was put down. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back to the story. We'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Turning Stone Resort and Casino, introducing Turquoise Tiger at Exit 33, a lounge bar inspired by 1940s film noir. For business professionals, turningstone.com. And College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. collegestreetmotors.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you. We know you have a lot bottled up after the past week, so please feel free. Roundtable@wamc.org. Real quick, and we only have a few minutes, but there was an item on CNN where they brought together a group of public health experts, they had them question them about the CDC, and there was a consensus of here are five things that they believe the CDC may be doing wrong. One is the CDC is telling possible Ebola patients to call a doctor. And they're saying that maybe that's not the best protocol because the doctors themselves are not, because normally when you go to call your doctor, you can't get your doctor. So then they tell you to go to the emergency room, and then you go to the emergency room, and that's bad. The CDC director says any hospital can care for Ebola patients, and ultimately they say few
except
hospitals
the one we know
have
of.
Been well then have received the kind of training in this regard so far. I'm sure that will get better. The CDC didn't encourage the buddy system for doctors. Under the system, a doctor or nurse who is about to do a procedure on an Ebola patient has a buddy, another healthcare worker who acts as a safety supervisor. The buddy system has been effective in stopping other kinds of infections in hospitals. And some public health officials say the CDC should consider such a policy. Also, they say that the CDC didn't encourage doctors to develop Ebola treatment guidelines. And they're talking about how taking care of Ebola patients is tricky because certain procedures might put doctors and nurses in contact with bodily fluids. But some officials have said that Presbyterian in Texas might have performed two measures, inserting a breathing tube and giving kidney dialysis, that were unlikely to help. Mm-hmm. So that's
and
another
issue.
And also
very dangerous for medical staff.
And finally, the case that Rosemary brought up, or the question that Rosemary brought up about the putting too much trust in the protective gear. Mm-hmm. We don't know that is foolproof either. So those are just a couple of things.
Well, you just
that are
said
being
it. We don't know. There's so much that we don't know, and I think, you know, that requires just even in incredible levels of caution, you know. And I think people realize that now, vigilance, but not panic. Panic can be. I mean, and it's already entered into the political sphere. You know, it's come out in campaign ads. People are linking it to, you know, the Obama administration's dot, dot, dot. You fill in the blank. And it's just already, it's just pretty sad how quickly something, you know, goes downhill like mm-hmm. that. Yeah. I mean, this is an important important story that people need to, that's immediately threatening us. Not that the environment isn't, but this is on our doorstep, literally and figuratively. Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with topics of the day as well as your letters. We'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Wonderful to have you with us. Wonderful to be back doing the panel after a couple days off or a fun driving. Yes. And it's great to be back. We thank you very much. And we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. And Alan is indicating that we have letters. So let's read those.
We do. Anne tells us, hello all. Here's something I have not heard discussed anywhere. Since one of the virus's reservoir is bats, a member of the rodent family, can mice and rats also become reservoir of this virus? This worries me more than dogs being possible carriers. That's what Anne said. I don't know. Does anybody else?
It sounds very Middle Ages.
Yes, although there is a great article in the New York Times about rats and the new state of the rat.
I saw it.
So, yeah.
They're winning the war in New York.
Yeah, so it's a...
They either got a city hall or they got a, you know. Jeannie says, good morning, Roundtable crew. While everyone else was preoccupied with why Ebola reached U.S. shores, the winner was former South Carolina Republican Party Executive Director Todd Kincannon, who came up with a solution, genocide. Here's his tweet, Todd Kincannon at Todd Kincannon. The protocol for a positive Ebola test should be immediate humane execution and sanitation of the whole area. That will save lives.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Is he talking about dogs?
I have no idea. Okay. Here is an outraged letter from Ethan. Dear Roundtable, I am outraged that no one is asking why Eric Duncan did not receive the plasma of the health worker who recovered from Ebola. The recovered patient offered his plasma to Duncan and spoke with the hospital in Dallas. The hospital did not follow up. Donating plasma has nothing in capital letters to do with a person's blood type, as was suggested when Duncan died. Also, supposedly, there was more ZMAPP capital. Suddenly, some has appeared to treat a patient in Spain. Okay, there was no more ZMAPP. Suddenly, some has appeared to treat a patient in Spain. Thank you from Lisa.
All right. What was the first part of that story? I'm sorry. The first part of that question?
That one of the cured patients offered plasma that might have helped Duncan, the man who died.
Well, I heard it the other way.
What'd you hear?
That from the doctor who beat the disease, right, offered the plasma to the nurse.
Oh, the nurse, not
the
Duncan.
Woman who's just ill.
Yes, that was a story that I could very well. That was what I think that when I looked up plasma, that was also what I found. But that was the story that I had heard. So that the Kent Bradley,
right,
was the one who survived Ebola, then gave the plasma to the nurse. But we'll see.
And Jamie writes,
yes,
why are you even discussing this? How is this responsible journalism and not tabloid sensationalism?
Oh, my God.
The story about influenza killing our children seems far more relevant and important to our society. Why is it so hard for you to keep on message on point? Is that not the press's responsibility? Well, Jamie, I'm shutting up now because otherwise somebody's going to have to jump over here and put their hand over my mouth.
Yeah, I mean, what is the press supposed to do? Discuss only things that are boring and unimportant to people? And it's not sensationalism to talk about something that is a
as the potential
potentially
this
sensational
is a legitimate
illness.
Public health.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is an outrageous letter.
Concern. It could be a crisis if not managed.
I mean, the New York Times has a half-page editorial today on the worsening Ebola crisis and that what we must do to tackle it domestically. I would say it's a pretty
one of the jobs of the press is to bring pressure on our government and on governments elsewhere to do what is right. So I think we should be talking more about this and not less. Responsibly talk about it, but not less.
I find that whole line of what people consider to be tabloid to be interesting. That when you do something that is, I guess, to an excessive degree, I don't know how people define it. It's interesting to me because in a story like this, I can't imagine what would be more important, especially when it seems to be affecting so much. I mean, now we're hearing stories out of Boston, so. This is moving around our country, and of course has been moving around the globe. It's certain. So what? if that's tabloid, then you know
he can't talk.
Ellen, you know, you're going by the adage: if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Let's move on.
Let's move on to something less sensational.
Yes, let's talk about the Catholic Church.
Homosexuality in the church.
Yes. how could we get in trouble on that? Top Vatican panel assisting Pope Francis went further than the church has gone before in affirming non-traditional relationships, saying Monday that the church must turn respectfully to couples such as those who live together unmarried or are of the same gender and appreciate the positive values those unions may have. The comments blew away some longtime Vatican experts because they put the Catholic Church, the world's largest, squarely in the middle of the mainstream public discussion about sexuality and marriage, rather than in one corner focused mostly on unchanging doctrine. What changes to doctrine or practice might follow from the suggestions, if any, weren't at all clear.
Well, you know, this is one brilliant pope, and I am a huge fan of what he's done. But I think that the main message that some people are missing here is that we're all sinners. And since we are all sinners, who are we to call other people sinners? And that is something that I think really has eluded us all in every religion for a long time.
That's a great and ecumenical message, ecumenism being another principle that the Catholic Church was very, very slow to adopt.
Yes.
And it started with a sort of message like this. This is just a very first step. Everybody's being very careful saying, don't make more of this than it really is. But it is a big deal. It's saying, for the first time, as a theologian in Fordham put it, the church is looking at what good can we find in something we have called horrible and bad for all these years. And that's important. They may end up saying, we were right. Keep the old rules, man and a woman, that's the only thing is a marriage. But for right now, at least they're looking at the potential good of closeness between and among homosexuals. That's a great thing.
Well, it's good. I think the bishops and the cardinals and the pope are doing nothing more than what a lot of priests and a lot of parish communities have been doing all along, and that is accepting people for what they are and seeing the good in them and focusing on the positive parts of what people have to offer, and not getting all doctrinal and orthodoxy, you know, bringing orthodoxy into it and letting. You know, and not judging people. And that's a significant shift in attitude at the top level. And it's not without repercussions. I mean, it's bringing out the conservatives.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's bringing out conservative cardinals and bishops who are sort of have a counter position. But, you know, the church is not a democracy. And the Pope is artful in bringing in to the discussion people who agree with him. And he's packing the College of Cardinals with people outside of Rome and outside of the tradition, and that's going to have long. You know, it's almost like the a president putting in a Supreme Court. You know, it's establishing a long-term, continuation of something. Now, it's going to take a long time before any shift in, you know, that would mean allowing or recognizing gay unions in the church.
Right.
And nobody is suggesting that this means that, but it is. I think you said it right. I mean, ecumenism was an idea that was foreign to a lot of Catholics. You know, Catholics before 1960s didn't even go into, they wouldn't, if they were invited to a wedding of a Jewish or Protestant friend, they wouldn't go to the church.
Yeah,
they'd just go to the reception.
Dispensation, right.
And they'd
exactly.
have to get permission to go.
Absolutely.
And I mean, the idea is kind of preposterous today. Maybe in 50 years after Vatican II, we're laughing about that. Maybe in 50 years, people will be laughing about how arcane the church was about sexuality.
That
was really well put.
Or maybe it'll go back the other way. We have seen that
could.
Happen before.
Oh, yeah.
Could.
I mean, that's always a possibility.
We didn't quite know what we were going to get with this guy. we got this.
But the people who pick this guy, he's picking them now. Who pick his successor, he's picking them now. So that does sustain a direction. And it's hard to put the brakes on change. And it really just shows how the church is being brought into the modern world.
To that point of it's hard to put the brakes on change, it seems to me that there could be, and again, it certainly could go backwards as much as it could go forwards.
And has.
And has. But it certainly seems as though there is, there could be a domino effect here in the sense of, well, when you start talking about what our relationships are and what we allow within the context of marriage in the church, then that opens up our definition not only to re-examine the relationship that women have in the church, relationship of the possibility of priests and marriage. It seems to me that maybe I'm misreading this, but it seems like by all of this, and again, to your point, Mike, of kind of stacking the court, that the conversation may or may not happen, but that there's a conversation that is now allowing to be held by just sort of this kind of going in the inward out.
In the United States on the Supreme Court, Anthony Scalia said something similar to what you did, Joe, that, okay, if we do away with the Marriage Act and marriage now is open to same sexes, what are we opening the door for? Is polygamy next? Is bestiality next? Is group marriage next? He kind of threw out the alarm of what comes next. Everything about the Catholic Church is set up to prevent you young whippersnappers from getting all your fancy ideas in. If this is going to come, it'll be over decades, I think.
Oh, sure.
Oh, decades. Yeah.
But I'm fascinated by the by the conversation taking place and the way it's taking place.
Exactly.
That it seems to be opening the door to having these other very important conversations, especially when you're looking at a crippling shortage of priests in this country
that we may not even be able to have.
Yeah. An active Catholic Church, if this is continues, that it seems like they have to address that, and this may be just one way of kind of putting those feelers out.
And you had a crippling outrage for the Catholic Church.
One of the largest scandals ever in the world.
That's right, and you know that
the
seems
priest
to,
sexual abuse of children issue.
Yeah, and it seems to me that this is if returning to the theme I was talking about before, we're all sinners. This is somehow tied in, it seems to me, to be able to say to the world, we're going to modernize the way we do things. And Joe, to your point about not enough male priests. That may just open up, you know, the concept of a female priest.
Well, a female priest. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I've heard priests say it's providential. It's God's way of forcing the issue.
And also, I love what Mike is saying, too, because I think it's so true, is that what we're seeing in the church from the Pope and from the Vatican is a reflection of what is happening in so many churches across the world and across this country in individual parishes. You can certainly find very, very conservative parishes, but you can also find very, very progressive parishes as well.
And you can also see things like, remember that this Pope comes from Latin America. And you can see, the Protestant denominations, the aggressive ones, eating the lunch of the Catholics.
That's right. Evangelical Protestants are growing, especially in the less developed countries in Central America and in Latin America. And the church is now seems like it's responding and being less rigid.
But the idea that this Pope has brought in that the church is going to return to a model of social justice is way important, and this is one aspect of it, poverty and treating homosexuals as human beings, not just as sinners. These are ideas that will have truck, not just in the United States, but around the world, in Africa, where homosexuals can be killed in some places.
And the other aspect of this, you know, we're talking about the how it affects gays and lesbians, but this really opens the door to a more openness about dealing with Catholics who've been divorced,
right?
Or Catholics who are living together and they're recognizing value in their unions, and they're looking at the dilemma of how do they bring their children into the faith rather than losing a direction for the next generation. And I think it begins a conversation. They haven't changed the doctrine. It's important. They haven't changed the doctrine.
No.
But that this
and
is
the
what
language is very vague.
It is vague, but it is at least not harsh.
Right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a lot of letters about Ebola and a couple of the other issues that we talked about. So we'll take a break. We'll come back, and then we'll finish up on with the letters. We welcome yours, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs. CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. And The Linda, WAMC's performing arts studio, presenting Food for Thought, Food for Change, Thursday, October 16th at 7 p.m., thelinda.org for more information.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a lot of letters to get to, many on Ebola, but on other topics as well.
Sure. Here we go. Joanne says, good morning, all. A priest I know told a story about a parishioner who was ranting to him about the homosexuals who were trying to whitewash themselves and how evil they were, et cetera, expecting a priest to agree with him. The priest lost his temper and told him in no uncertain terms that he was not allowed to cherry-pick the Bible. He was a divorced man who had remarried and therefore, according to the scripture, was living in sin. I remember this comment made at coffee hour more than any sermon I ever heard. Interesting. And then from Chuck. Well said, Alan, we are all sinners, and who are we to judge another? Three question marks. Hopefully some parish priests will follow the lead of the Holy Father and open their minds and their hearts. And that's from Chuck. And then from Wesley. Medical professionals perform their jobs in the presence of airborne diseases such as influenza every day without becoming infected. Talk of Ebola, maybe, slash possibly mutating into an airborne status strikes me as more panic. And that's from Leslie in Schenectady. And then, Elizabeth, certain viruses can be harbored in the soil. Is this true of Ebola? And what if Ebola became entrenched in our soil? Parvovirus is often fatal virus for dogs and is very, very hardy. It can survive on shoes, tires, etc. Perhaps we must consider quarantines and restricted travel until this deadly scourge is contained. Spreading it helps no one. From Matt, who says, bats are not rodents. Mm-hmm. And from Amy.
They're mammals.
Yeah, from Amy. Please thank everyone in capital
thank you, Mike.
Capital letters for a wonderful job. Well done. Thanks, Donna. Okay, that's from Amy. And that, I believe, is it.
Thank you.
1-800.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's go to another story real quick, and that is on this is interesting, but the Pentagon on Monday released a report asserting decisively that climate change poses an immediate threat to national security with increased risks from terrorism, infectious disease, global poverty, and food shortages. We're doomed.
The report pointed out that ISIS has grabbed for dams and other important water quality control facilities as proof of this. Yeah, scarce resources getting scarcer, people under pressure.
It lays out a roadmap to show how the military will adapt to rising sea levels, more violent storms, and widespread droughts. The Defense Department will begin by integrating plans for climate change risks across all of its operations, from war games and strategic military planning situations to a rethinking of the movement of supplies.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
look to higher ground.
We don't have to go any further. Right. We don't have to go any further than Sandy.
That's right.
I mean, we saw it happen.
Yep.
Gore told us it would happen. He showed us the map. It turned out to be exactly as he said it would.
As he predicted.
Yeah.
And that is that was one other issue I wanted to get to, I guess, and that is the arrests in Ferguson yesterday on Columbus Day. There were a number of protests and arrests. Protesters, including Cornel West, I guess, was the the leader of the protest. Carefully staged events on Monday across not only Ferguson but also the St. Louis region made up the largest and most organized acts of civil disobedience in the 2 months since a white police officer shot and killed an unarmed black teenager, Michael Brown. And so this is still very much an issue, and there were I was looking for a final number on arrests, and I know that there were I know Cornel West was arrested, or a couple of others, but I don't know what the final arrest.
The younger generation is divided. They do not want to be told, let us investigate, we'll get back to you, we'll take care of this, be patient. They're saying this is important, do something now. Very interesting.
Yeah, and anybody who puts themselves into the shoes of a black parent, for example, and knows that their kid is going to be subjected, you know, to driving while black, walking while black, and the rest of it, it's so easy to understand.
I mean, if they there must be a feeling that if they do not do this, that it will just kind of go away and become, you know, some grand jury report down the road, and this keeps it on the front burner and brings it back to the front burner, really.
I think that's exactly what they're doing.
And it always comes down to how we recruit our police, who they are, how scared they are, what's appropriate, what's not. It's not an easy job, that's for sure.
I think we have to put more resources into the training, the selection, the outfitting, the
monitoring,
the process monitoring
punishment
of our police, so that they're better equipped and better supported. And, you know, these guys just were not ready for what happened in Ferguson. We all know that now.
Well, some of the things that had been seen as options for police officers, I believe, both in New York City and Queens and here, are no longer options. I mean, that's the one thing that you come away from with this stuff, that somebody who's going to show off for his buddies or somebody who's going to just be out there is going to think a long time before they do that again.
Yeah, right.
We always welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and we will, of course, return and have another conversation tomorrow. We welcome you to join us for that. In the meantime, roundtable@wamc.org. Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok, thank you very much
Thanks,
for
Thank
being
you,
here. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.